I'm Bill Littlefield.
From 44 yards. On the way. And he missed it.
The Chargers debuted at their new home in Los Angeles last Sunday, and it wasn't great. And that's where we're going to begin on this week's edition of Three Stories You Should Know. My guests are the Wall Street Journal's Jason Gay and Sports on Earth's Will Leach. Welcome back to both of you.
Thank you, Bill.
An honor as always, sir.
Will, the honor will continue. Tell us about that Chargers game.
Yes, I was at that game. They played it at the StubHub Center, the home of the Los Angeles Galaxy soccer team, which holds 27,000 people. It was not full. I believe Greg Gumbel was, in fact, not using a microphone. And any sound that you heard at the end of that kick that was missed that cost the Chargers the game probably was the loudest cheer of anything that happened the whole game, because there were probably more Miami Dolphins fans there. Obviously, with the NFL's mistakes and all the troubles they've had, they had 20 years to figure out the Los Angeles thing and then just kind of like threw two teams out the car window. They didn't stop on the road as they were kind of passing by. And so one of the things that's kind of funny is I was expecting indifference from Los Angeles fans about the Chargers, because that's mostly what I got when I talked to them about the Rams. I went to the game last year. This year was more outright hostility. It was that San Diego's team. We want nothing to do with them. It was really quite amazing to see the Chargers, a popular team in San Diego and not even that bad of a team, playing in this intimate environment. It was about the saddest possible way to introduce your team to a new city.
I think it's probably a bad omen for the Chargers to put their games in a stadium which gave its naming rights to a secondary ticket marketing company. There are some merits, I suppose, to watching bad football from much farther away. We should take this into consideration when we consider intimacy in sporting events, that you might not want to be terribly close to a Chargers game.
Will, I understand that you do have some suggestions regarding the Chargers, how they might be able to reverse this situation. Let us know what some of them are.
One way would be to embrace kind of the strange situation. I remember when I lived in Los Angeles 20 years ago, and there was an advertisement in the Los Angeles Times that had a really big picture of Michael Jordan and a really small picture of Brett Barry. The tagline said, "Brett Barry and the Clippers don't have to pay a lot to watch Michael Jordan this year, and now you don't either. Get our six-game package." So it's a temporary home, treated as a temporary home, almost like the Airbnb of sports.
What about bespoke home delivery? What about just having the Chargers come play at your house?
We've got a big backyard. Why not?
Yeah, it doesn't even have to be that big of a backyard, frankly, with the number
medium
of people.
All right, so the Chargers are sad. Let's move on to a happy topic, at least for lots of baseball fans. Home runs are happy. And this season, the total home run record has fallen. That's the number of home runs across all of Major League Baseball. The Maguire-Sosa era totals are piddling compared to what the sluggers and even people who were never sluggers before have accomplished this season. Some of the pitchers are saying the ball is juiced. Major League Baseball says the ball is not juiced, and neither are the hitters. And the fans just seem to be enjoying the dingers. Should we be suspicious this time around that either Major League Baseball has juiced the ball to make the game more popular, or that the players, like athletes throughout time, have found new undetectable substances with which to become better sluggers? Jason, what do you think?
Well, I mean, gentlemen, has there been anything in baseball history that would lead you to believe that there was perhaps some sort of illicit substances being used? You know, I think suspicion is pretty acceptable here. Baseball likes to talk very much about the fact that it has cleaned up its act, that its drug testing has become more stringent, and that its drug testing might be the class of major sports in America. But that is a very, very, very low bar. Anytime you hear explanations ranging from launch angles of bats to the kinds of balls that are being used to the acceleration now of high-speed pitching, you know, you got to throw in the normal, traditional Occam's razor type explanations, which have borne out historically anytime you've seen unprecedented performance in any kind of athletic endeavor. Mm. So if that makes me a bitter old baseball skeptic, I'll accept that.
One thing I will say, I like that we've got to the point, by the way, that we are now using the word tradition in the same sentence as performance-enhancing drugs. Like in the great tradition of baseball, there are performance-enhancing drugs.
People talk about greenies like it was you know, some great tradition like Cracker Jack. They had a jar of greenies, Will! They'd go in there and they'd have their chewing tobacco and they'd have their greenies!
I don't quite have the moral outrage about performance-enhancing drugs that I think a lot of people do. But I would also say that I think poo-pooing the idea of launch angles and poo-pooing the idea of – like there have been scientific studies to talk about how the ball does seem to be wound tighter this year. And listen, you look at the way the direction the game is going. This is becoming a three true outcome sport. Home runs, walks, strikeouts, mm-hmm. particularly strikeouts. So many strikeouts. Certainly, there's probably people in baseball that are taking drugs that we don't know about. But I do not think that this is a sudden spike because of that specific thing.
Why is baseball so adamant about saying that it's not the ball? Every time these kinds of rushes have happened, they've been very quick to say that nothing is amiss with the ball.
Yeah, I see your point. As long as everybody's hitting the same ball, what the hell's the difference?
Yeah, but then you wouldn't be able to blame the players for it. And listen, I don't think that there is a secret memo out there from Rob Manfred saying, tight the balls a little tighter, tighter with the balls. That's not how Rob Manfred talks at all, by the way.
No, that's more like how Count Dracula talks.
Yes. I was going for a Montgomery Burns a little there, too. But there is no memo of him, like, demanding that to happen. But this is not the first time that a ball in history would be a little tighter or a little looser. But the problem is, in this kind of environment, particularly with the tradition of baseball, as we've talked about, people are going to see nefariousness in every corner. Or justified or not.
If somebody wants to investigate the abundance of home runs, it's fine with me as long as it's not the U.S. Congress, because as far as I'm concerned, there are more important things for them to do than talk to people like Mark McGwire and Curt Schilling. Jason, last but not least, you got to hang out with Emma Stone. Explain, please.
Well, that's just a Thursday for me, Bill, in my life. But I did get to speak to the lovely Emma Stone, the Oscar winner from La La Land, whose new movie is out. It's Battle of the Sexes, in which Emma Stone plays Billie Jean King in her famous 1973 triumph over Bobby Riggs. And what I wanted to talk about here was that, guys, there have been a lot of bad tennis movies. Wimbledon didn't really live up to Wimbledon. However, I have to say that Battle of the Sexes not only succeeds in rendering the great life of Billie Jean King, but also is a really great tennis movie. And the way they did it, it was kind of ingenious. They hired actual pros to do a recreation of the 1973 match. And I got to speak to the doubles, the tennis doubles. They not only had to go out there and play realistic tennis, they had to go out and play realistic 1973 tennis.
With so wood rackets.
Like wooden rackets with catgut strings. Catgut! Serve and volley, chip and charge, crash the net, all the stuff that you really don't see in the power baseline game anymore. And it took months and months of practicing for them to finally get it down.
I would like to argue that the most convincing actor-athlete of all time is Ed the Monkey in the Ed the Baseball Player
movie. Yes.
My movie, followed closely by, of course, John C. Reilly, who looks more like a catcher than anyone I've ever met in my life.
Well, unhappily, I am not familiar with Ed the Monkey. I know that's a terrible thing.
We know
to admit.
What you're doing this weekend, Bill.
I do love that Billie Jean King herself has endorsed the tennis playing in this movie, and that's good enough for me. And I hope that we'll all get free tickets in the mail, having endorsed this movie so energetically.
It thrills me, actually, as a huge tennis fan, for people who might not care about the sport or just Emma Stone or Steve Carell fans, to go and actually see this like newly breathing piece of history, because there's never been anything like it for this sport.
My guests for this week's edition of Three Stories You Should Know have been Jason Gay of The Wall Street Journal and Will Leach of Sports on Earth. Thanks to both of you.
Thanks, guys.
Get out there and see the Ed the Monkey baseball player movie.